Welcome to Politics in Command, a show that deals with geopolitical and political issues in South Africa and around the world. My name is Sithembiso Msomi. I'm editor-at-large at Arena Holdings, and our guest today is going to be Professor Zhang Weiwei from the Fudan University in China. We are going to talk about the state of democracy in the world and his views that the Western system is not the best that Africa should be following, and why he believes that, and why he thinks that we should be looking at China for some of the solutions to our problems. Professor Zhang, welcome to South Africa. I believe you've been here a couple of times, so you are used to the country. What attracts you to come and visit our country and give talks?
Well, this time it had to do with preparation for G20.
Yes.
And we discussed with our counterparts here, and why not we come to South Africa and talk to the think tanks here, to some leaders here, and to the media, to the people. So this is our idea.
Okay. Yeah. And the topic of your talk on Monday was talking more on good governance,
yes,
which is an issue that is being debated in South Africa right now. What was your central message?
The point is, we want to, as far as China is concerned, we think the Western discourse or narrative on good governance, on democracy, is faulty.
Mm.
So from Chinese success and Chinese experience, we think we have to redefine what constitutes democracy, what constitutes good governance. So my approach is a kind of a paradigm shift for those who are familiar with Western political discourse. Basically, we think it should be democracy should focus more on its substance. In Chinese, we see for anything we talk about, first is the Dao. Dao means overall purpose.
Okay.
Then Shu. Shu means specifics, procedures. Yes. So democracy in the West today has been defined as a multi-party system, one person, one vote, universal suffrage. These are procedures.
Mm.
We think to what extent they should serve the overall purpose.
Yeah.
For us, it's good governance. The government that should deliver to the, for the interests of the people. We say there should be overall balance between political power, social power, and capital power in favor of the vast majority of the population. Mm. That's good purpose. U.S. is a typical case of minority rule, so-called democracy, yet serving 1%, even less.
Mm.
As a result, you have a Donald Trump. A happy country don't produce Donald Trump as a leader.
China, well, won't you say that is democracy? That is what the people wanted.
No, this is really the Western political discourse. We super distorted. We reject this categorically. It's ridiculous. It's called democracy. It's laughable.
It's laughable.
Laughable.
But people go out in their millions to go and vote.
Even millions. It's still, if you look at the percentage, it's still less.
It's still less.
Yeah. Mm. It's about 50%.
Yeah.
If you look at the overall turnout rate for U.S. elections, it's in average 50-55%. They think this is democracy. You think so?
So when you compare that with the Chinese model, so the critics would say that the Chinese model does not have democracy. You basically select leaders instead of electing them. But you've argued that the Chinese model will not have produced a Donald Trump. So what is it that you think is good with the Chinese model?
The Western model is election.
Yes.
The Chinese model is selection plus election. A good political system from Chinese boundary must be originated from its own traditions.
Mm.
It is so important. It must be indigenous and supported by its people. In the case of China, China was the country that invented the system of selecting public civil servants.
Yes.
Yeah, over 1,500 years ago. As a result, we have this long tradition of selection, the competent and the most competent, or more competent, and then also have the Western element election. but we all put selection first, election second. If you look at the top echelon of Chinese leadership, virtually top seven members of the Standing Committee of Political Bureau, virtually most of them have worked as governor or party secretary, number one of Chinese province, three provinces at least.
Yeah.
As a result, governed over 100 million people before they come to current position, virtually all of them start from grassroots, like Xi Jinping, found the very small unit of village and township, and then county, and then province, and then top leadership. So by far the Chinese leadership, in terms of quality of leadership, is way ahead of Western standards.
So you don't think there is value in a leader who didn't go through those public office terrain, but they end up, let's say they were in business, like Champ was in business, and because of the experience in business, then you can run government. You don't think that
no, is this could be a major problem in the United States. If a tycoon, a business leader, became top leader of a country, did you see the problem of interests? You see the stock rises, you know, whatever. This is dangerous. It's so, if I use the famous line from Stiglitz, Professor Stiglitz, and he said, now United States is off the 1%, for the 1%, by the 1%. Yeah, it's not too wrong. It's basically correct. They look at the Chinese performance over the past four decades and a half. China economy increased by 48-fold. Before that, if you look at figures, China GDP was as low as Malawi. Lower than most African countries.
Yes.
But today, it's the largest economy by purchasing power parity since 2014.
Is it not just because of the size of your population even if you had Western democracy, you were going to end up...
No, we tried that Western democracy system and end up in failure in disintegration of the country, in degenerating into civil wars. That was the 1911 revolution. And Dr. Sun Yat-sen, then the president, he said, we should copy the American model. They end up in warlords fight each other. And each warlord supported by one European or Western power and fight each other. So China drew a heavy lesson. We must pioneer our own way. And today, if you look at this, you just compare the leadership, the quality of leadership between China and United States, and the level, the quality of decision-making in the two countries. Even look at the trade war, tariff war imposed by the United States on China. When Donald Trump said, he was electing for the campaign, and he said, I will levy 60% tariff for Chinese produce. I said to American reporters, tell your president, make 600%. You know, U.S. economy already more dependent on China's economy than other way around. Your supermarket will be empty, will be half empty at least. As a result, you look at the result of tariff war. Furthermore, United States also imposed a tech war, banned Huawei, and banned chips to China. Do you know what has happened? Within a decade, today, if you look at the latest report by Australian think tank, ASPI, out of the 67, out of the 64 most critical technologies, China leads the United States in 57. That's the end result. So I said we should give a medal to Donald Trump.
So, Prof, I want to go back to this question of whether the successes that we see with China are as a result of its system or are as a result of the fact that the sheer size of the population means that China will eventually be the biggest economy in the world.
No, it must be it's the result of this has to do with Chinese political system. It has worked effectively. I'll give you an example why China now can compete with United States in high tech, in AI, in all these areas, in national defense capability. And China today, every year, produces more scientists, engineers, than the Western countries combined.
Mm.
You would take last year as an example. In every day, 7.24 million Chinese scientists, engineers working R&D. It's five times more than United States.
Mm.
And who trained all these scientists? From day one of New China, People's Republic of China, we emphasize STEM, science and technology education.
Mm.
And Chairman Mao said, China, be a socialist country.
Mm.
And our system is supposed to be superior to capitalist system.
Mm.
So we must surpass the United States within 5 to 6 decades. And we are doing that.
Sort of that. Yes.
We have a vision for the future. I have the vision carried out.
Mm. Do you think it is easier now to talk about the advantages of the Chinese system because there is a Donald Trump in the US office? So if there wasn't a populist leader running the US, if it was, I don't know if you will regard Obama as having been better than Trump, it depends on one's politics. But do you think it's easier because now there is a populist president in office?
No, it's more historical. You may remember the 2011 Arab Spring.
Yes.
And during that high time of that spring, Fukuyama, the author of the end of history,
yes,
came to Shanghai.
Yes.
And we had a fascinating debate.
Yes, it's very popular on YouTube.
That he predicted, you know, China may experience its own Arab Spring.
Yes.
Because from his end of history thesis, of course, even Arabs began to embrace so-called democracy, So next is China.
Yeah.
I said, no chance. I predict Arab Spring will soon become Arab Winter with certainty. Yeah.
Mm.
In the end, as we all know, it became winter.
Mm.
And then I also made another prediction because Fukuyama said with a lot of confidence that China should go through serious political reform.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your system is only accountable for the top, not for the below, not for the people.
Yeah.
I said, in fact, both China and the United States need political reform.
Mm.
From my research of your system, American system, you need more reform.
Mm.
Because our reforms are going on all the time.
Yes.
Small, middle, big, but all the time, nonstop.
Mm.
China, the expert on reform. We've been talking about reform every day, every month, every year, since 1978.
Mm.
But your system, American system, I said, is a product of pre-industrial year, agricultural society.
Mm.
Then I said, if you do not carry out political reform in a serious way, you are going to elect a leader worse off than George W. Bush.
Mm.
I don't know, he's right again. So this, you know, in 2011, huh?
Yes.
So 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yes. So you are here and you've spoken to National School of Government,
yes.
I think 2023 and again this year.
why
are South African civil servants so interested in your views?
Anyway, they invited me.
Yes, they did. I'm just interested in.
No,
are they saying the current system that we have in the country is not working and so they have to look?
No, indeed, the rise of China, China's success story has attracted a lot of attention and interest. Not only in China, but also not only in Africa, but also in Latin America, in Middle East, in many developing countries. Today, even the Western countries are interested.
Yeah.
I just read an article published in New York Times, which said, you know, you look at the future scenario for AI competition. It will no longer be between China and the United States. It will be between the two Chinese cities, Shenzhen and Hangzhou, which produces DeepSeek.
Yeah.
That's in New York Times. You can check.
Yeah.
So for African, as you know, China has supported the struggle against apartheid, against colonialism since 1960s and all along. I myself was deeply involved because I was an interpreter in the Chinese Foreign Ministry.
Yes.
When Chairman Nyerere, when Kaunda and Mugabe and Chairman Rawlings of Ghana, when they came to China, I was an interpreter, so I was a bit knowledgeable about the history for this kind of struggle. And this is a long-term relationship. So China's whatever cooperation with Africa is totally different from the Western approach. The Western approach is very clear, divide and rule. China approach is unite and prosper.
Yes.
A clear good example is if you look at the airline today, if we want to fly from West Africa to East Africa, you have to go via London or Paris. But China tried to help regional, African, continental-wide highway system, railway system, and transportation system, and airline system. So as a result, I look at the BRI, Belt and Road Initiative. It's only $1 trillion invested, over 5,000 projects worldwide. Roughly one-third come to Africa. I was in Berlin. I said, let China and Europe work together to help Africa. Because they are faced with this, what they are concerned is so-called the immigration and many from Africa. I said, we create jobs. Don't create Arab Spring or African Spring. In the end, end up with disasters. Help, you just go there to know exactly what people want. Number one, you know, job. Number two, better food. Number three, better healthcare. Number four, you know, security, safety, whatever. And do this accordingly. One, two, three, four. That's Chinese model.
So, Prof, how do you then deal with the, you know, there always this talk of, well, we had the Western powers coming to Africa, colonizing Africa. We must watch against working too closely with China because China may have the same intentions.
No, this is always the limitation of the Western. And from their point of view, the world is always black and white. If they did something wrong, others will do the same. If they did something terrible, others will do the same. Their stories, their portrayal of Xinjiang, for instance, so ridiculous, so laughable for most Chinese. I was talking to in Berlin. I said, do you know, in Xinjiang alone, we have a huge desert the size of Germany. Now it has been encircled with a green belt in which millions and millions of solar panels. As a result, Xinjiang produced the least expensive electricity in China. Many enterprises, international enterprises, go to Xinjiang. Underneath solar panels, drought-resistant vegetables, vegetation. So Xinjiang now is the one of the largest producers of rice, wheat, and even fish for Chinese market, for international market. All this story you don't tell to the people, but you tell this ridiculous fabrication from CIA, from deep state. So same stories they are covering this about civil, so-called civil society, NGOs in Africa, in Latin America, try to smear China as a result. But in the end, we'll look at opinion survey. That's more convincing. Virtually all credible opinion surveys tell the roughly most Africans today and most African countries appreciate China's role to help Africa's industrialization and modernization.
But why is China interested in developing the continent?
Oh, this is very important. In one way, because the Chinese always have this idea, you may say socialist, which is if we are poor, we work hard ourselves to change our fate. If we are slightly better off, rich, we help our neighbors, our friends. So our whole principle for BRI is based on this idea. It's called the discussing together, building together, benefiting together. It's also important to know this is, you may see Chinese soft power, Chinese ideal for better society. China's civilizational state, we believe in one humanity. In this, what we call not divide and rule, but unite and prosper, not on the table or in the menu. This is ridiculous for Chinese philosophy. So it's a total different mentality vis-à-vis United States, vis-à-vis Donald Trump.
And so at the end of the Cold War, the thinking or most of what was being told to Africans is that for you to prosper, you need to build multi-party democracies. And that is what most of the African countries have been working towards since the early 1990s. And you seem to be coming with a message that says multi-party democracy isn't a solution or isn't the most important step that you need to take.
If I can be frank and to give some advice to my African friends, it will be to really study and practice how to break this election populism cycle. With this kind of cycle, it will be very difficult to achieve modernization. Virtually don't have stability. If you look at Chinese case, now we all know China is the leader in EVs. This is the result of 4 or 5 year plans, 20 years commitment, non-stop commitment. I was joking with the Europeans because they talk a lot about climate change and carbon neutrality, green transition, green deal. They are still talking. China has completed, done it in China. Meanwhile, last year, China economy grew by 5%, world's largest economy, PPP. Yet its total emission of CO2 dropped by 1.6%. But Chinese government is still very cautious. They did not announce it, make it public. We knew because Chinese government said, let's be cautious. Perhaps this year, hopefully, can remain this trend, then we can declare. If it goes up, then it cannot. So you need long-term commitment and have them. I tell you this Xinjiang's case, Taklamakan Desert Reclamation, it's 46 years, 4 decades and a half commitment, have it done. So Deng Xiaoping famous said, for a country as large as China, we need 100 years stability and commitment to development.
But can't you have that stability whilst you're still having multi-party democracy?
The point is, for the Western political system, these parties are so-called election-oriented parties, pretty much populist, and pretty much what I call the partisan parties. As a result, with each election, the society becomes more divided. The Chinese principle, unite and prosper. Within one country, it's all unite and prosper within China. You know, China, as I said, a civilizational state. China was first unified in 221 BC. And it's amalgamation of hundreds of states into one over its long history. If you have this so-called multi-party system, you have this partisan inter-parties, the result was civil wars, people fighting with each other, different provinces, different cities fighting with each other. Fortunately, we learned this lesson from 1911, failure of 1911. And then we practice our own system. It's called the holistic interest party. Because in China's long history, over the past 2,000 years, in most cases, China was governed by a kind of one-party system, what called unified ruling entity. And this system was buttressed, sustained by strict system of meritocracy. Only those who are most competent are selected. Obviously, the system works better than West system, but the West system is fearful of this.
But there was the argument will then be, in the West, the civil service, you can use meritocracy there, because then these are people who are trained and they get to occupy those positions based on their education and skills. And then, but the elected leaders are supposed to be popular leaders that people want to govern them. And that the problem with your system is that because people don't directly elect, that at some stage they might feel that they need to rise up against the state. So you say that is not...
No, this is an assumption you can always have. Because obviously, you know, I have been to field investigation over 100 countries. And I can say with certainty, you know, I came concluding, I said this many times, a non-Western country, a non-Western society, adopting Western type of political system, usually ends up in two scenarios, from very hopeful to disappointment, or from full of hope to to anarchy.
Mm.
And now this is also happening with the West.
Mm.
If you look at the European continent, especially Western Europe, it's a lose-lose for all. Mm. They've lost peace, they've lost development, they've lost prosperity.
Mm.
And Germany produced famous plan, German Industry 4.0.
Mm.
It's in shatters.
Mm.
China learned from this plan and produced Made in China 2025. Mm. It's done.
Mm.
So with China, the system of China is, of course, suitable for China, but we can share our experience with you. You need to have a system that, to ensure continuity of policies for development. Otherwise, unless you consider political system has nothing to do with development, it's pure for a coffee shop chatting, debating, aristocracy, whatever. We reject this category. It's a very backward system, to be honest. We think we should be innovative. Try to find something from our own traditions and then combine and selecting elements from other systems and build your own system.
Yeah.
I counsel our friends in this time in my lectures. I said, could we try out one thing? We produce a vision for South Africa, say for 2050 or 2035.
So produced by South Africa or produced?
By South Africa.
Yes.
But this process of producing this kind of visionary plan must experience, go through extensive consultations.
Yeah.
And all the parties more or less agree to the basic principle. After all, African countries already accept this African Union's objective 2063. So why not each African country produce this kind of vision for their own country? It should be a plan that can be enforced, can be implemented. So it will become part of our national objective. Whichever political parties come to power, you cannot deviate from this objective.
Mm.
Yeah. And then it will become, even in your constitution, contain this element in the textbooks, in your schools, universities, and in all the political parties, make sure they were committed to that. Otherwise, how to ensure development?
Is that not easier because China has had a system for thousands of years, but new countries, I mean, the oldest African countries are not 70 years old as independent countries. Yeah. So this idea of having an overarching national view of where you're going becomes very difficult because people are just competing for power.
Yeah. This is the problem with this Western model as a whole. And, but I think it's always possible if we try out some innovations to fix system here and then gradually moving towards development oriented, modernization oriented.
Yeah.
The point is you have to first develop and get people better off and the country become more prosperous. And in China, we say make the cake bigger, and then we discuss divide. Otherwise, we discuss focus. Democracy, Western style is always focused on dividing the cake rather than making the cake bigger.
Yeah,
yeah, so this is a dialectical relation between the two. And you have to find the balance between. And Africa has its own civilizational roots, cultural roots. Here in many parts of Africa, you have this Ubuntu. Civilization, culture.
Which are you saying we must anchor whatever we do on that
history and
tradition?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Chairman Mao tried out, you know, he said Marxism with Chinese characteristics.
Mm.
So he said, Lenin said we should have a proletarian working class revolution.
Yeah.
Chairman Mao said, we are so poor, we do not have working class. We don't have peasants.
Yeah.
So he began this peasants driven revolution. It's also successful.
Yeah. No, thank you very much.
Thank you
for your time. And I hope you enjoyed being here. Are you back for the G20 when it happens? Will you be here?
I will not be here, but I hope really G20 is a good opportunity for South Africa to show itself to the world, its dynamism and its potentials, same for the whole Africa. Yeah. So congratulations to South Africa for this event. This first time to be held in Africa. So it's a great honor for South Africa.
Do you think it is a problem that Donald Trump is probably not coming? Will it devalue the status of the summit?
No, my idea is put Donald Trump in the appropriate place.
Which is
not that high. I checked, US African trade volume last year was only $70 billion, which is not big. China's trade with whole Africa last year was close to $300 billion. It's still growing fast. So I said, if United States now levies 30% tariff on South African goods, including avocados, sell them to China.
When United States imposed so many sanctions, tariffs on African countries, China just announced we offer zero tariff access to African countries. Zero. So avocado from South Africa will be cheaper in China.
So we should be focusing, looking at the East.
That's true. If you look at the BRICS 11 members in total, today they all represent 40% of global GDP. And G7, maximum 33%. It's already different. And I just read the United States levied 50% tariff on Brazil. And China just signed a deal with Brazil. We buy all your coffee. So almost you can see, this effect from the United States will not be that effective at all.
But when you look at the automotive sector for us here, for instance, we export a lot of vehicles to the US market. We can't compete with China exporting the same vehicles to China because it looks like your cars are more popular than the ones that you're going to see.
People have ingenuity. We'll find the ways, maybe there'll be temporary challenges, hiccups. But the overall trend is the future is with the global south, not with global north. This is my basic perception. You can sell to Russia, you can sell to India, you can sell to other countries.
So you think that the West is really as a power, as a superpower, is in decline?
You don't believe so?
You had it
prophesied. I predicted. I also believe so. If you look at economically, I mentioned the overall size of global South, BRICS alone, bigger than G7. And technologically, I mentioned the figure out of the 64 categories, critical technology, China beats United States in 57. And militarily, I just quoted the famous line you have never heard from U.S. Defense Secretary Hexes. He said we must be cautious with China because China now had a missile, supersonic missile system, which can sink all our aircraft carriers within 20 minutes.
In 20 minutes.
Yeah. From my information, it's between 1 hour and 3 hours. But he said that he had got more reliable information. Yeah. 20 minutes. Yeah. He made this remark November last year.
Yeah.
He repeated it again April this year. You can check the YouTube.
Yeah.
And ideologically, we believe in one humanity. We believe in win-win. We believe in building together, discussing together, benefiting together.
Yeah.
It's working well. Internal trade between China and United States, or between China and Africa, is already more than four times that between the United States and Africa.
Yeah.
So put the United States in the appropriate place, not that
which is not that high. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's also good enough to talk with our friends in Africa. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.